This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. A new exhibit at Emory University sheds light on the HIV/AIDS crisis of the 1980s. It includes photos of HIV-positive people that were taken by Atlanta photographer Billy Howard. Billy joins me in our studio to talk more about this collection. Also with us is Doug Lothis. He agreed to be photographed for this project almost 30 years ago. He moved from Atlanta a few years ago to Palm Springs, California, and he joins us on the phone. Hi, Doug.
Celeste. Hi, Billy.
So let's start, Doug, by I'm wondering about that experience of being photographed, and you knew that this was for a collection of photos of other people also struggling through HIV or AIDS. So was it difficult for you to make the decision to be part of that?
Well, yes. It did take a little time. Billy came. I was in a support group at, I think it was the Atlanta Gay Center maybe at the time. And Billy came to us and made his proposal. And I probably took about a week before I got back in touch with him, because certainly in 1987-88, the stigma around someone with HIV or AIDS was huge. And you couldn't get insurance, you could be denied a job, housing. The discrimination could be severe. So when I said, Billy, I really want to do this, but I don't want to be totally recognizable.
And that's why you have a turtleneck covering part of your face?
Correct. And my hands.
Billy, how difficult was it for you to convince people to be part of this collection of photos, especially at a time when a diagnosis of HIV or AIDS was, for many people, a death sentence?
Well, I knew that at the time, and the stigma was so intense that, for me, I decided that I didn't want to convince anybody to be a part of it. I wanted to create a project where they would come to me, so I needed to reach out and find ways to tell people about the project. And like Doug said, I went to a lot of support groups, and I would make a presentation, and I would leave my contact information and would say, there's no pressure. Anybody that, if somebody wants to be a part of this, they can contact me. So I waited for people to find me to photograph them for the project. I wanted them to be able to make the decision on their own without any pressure. And so when Doug called me, it was, he said he wanted to be a part of the project, but could, if I'm remembering correctly, you asked if you could be part of it without a photograph. And I said, you know, we couldn't do that,
but
we can work together to come up with a way to have you in the book without being recognized.
So, Doug, how has it been since then? And many, many years have passed, but I wonder what that was like when people first saw your photo in that collection and what kind of conversations you had.
Really, people didn't see it unless they purchased the book. And if they purchased the book, I wouldn't necessarily know it. So it just was out there. And without any recognizable name or my face, I really didn't have. Now, I would share it with friends and family, but actually nobody knew.
So do you wish that they had, or are you happy that it's more anonymous?
Oh, no. I wish, and I'm glad at the time that it did what it was supposed to do, because I was also pursuing a theater career in Atlanta, so I didn't want to be the face of AIDS in Atlanta or HIV, and that prohibited me from working.
And in many cases, Billy, from some of your stories, it sounds as though the biggest impact was on the people photographed themselves. I wonder if you'd tell me a little bit about Ron, who was the first person you photographed?
Ron was the first person I photographed. I met him at a Grady AIDS clinic. And Grady Hospital AIDS clinic. And it was like the whole project came together just in that one meeting. I was searching for something to do to address the AIDS epidemic, because my dentist, who had become a friend of mine, suddenly vanished. And I later found out that he had contracted AIDS. He had left Atlanta, died at his mother's home in Florida, and had completely isolated himself. And he was a vibrant, very fun man with a lot of friends, and he left them all.
Because, do you remember what year that was?
1987. It was the, 1986, because I started the project in 1987. And so I was looking for a way to respond to that. And when I met Ron, that was the entree into that world. And Ron and I bonded immediately. And later he told me the reason that he trusted me was that the first thing I did when I met him was reach out to shake his hand. And that was a period of time when a lot of healthcare workers and people in the police community would not touch somebody with AIDS unless they had latex gloves on. And that just had never, I never bought into that myth. So Ron was, it was similar to my dentist. He had been a healthcare administrator in Clayton County. And when he found out he was HIV positive, he left his job, left all his friends, told nobody where he was going. And when I met him, he was living in a one room, in a rooming house in Atlanta. And what he said in his statement when he wrote the words that he wrote under his picture was that he was afraid of dying all alone. One of the, in the first part of the project, the Atlanta paper, Atlanta Journal-Constitution ran a story on what I was doing, and they ran Ron's picture. His friends and coworkers in Clayton County saw it in the paper and contacted me and said that they were worried about Ron, and they didn't know what had happened to him, and he had just kind of dropped off the face of the earth, and could they get in touch with him? So I reached out to Ron and asked him, and he said it was okay, and those coworkers became Ron's support group for the rest of his life.
So he did not.
So he did not die alone, which was his biggest fear. And that...
Because of the photo you took.
It's hard to judge whether you can make an impact with photography, but that one instance, to me, made the entire project worthwhile.
So, Doug, here we are. It's 2016, and Atlanta has a rate of HIV infection that rivals some countries in Africa. And I wonder if you have ideas why. Why, with all the education that we have now, with the improved medication that we have, why are we still struggling with such an incredibly high rate of infection here?
Well, I think part of it may be Atlanta is such a mecca in the southeastern United States for gays and lesbians and people of transgender orientation that they flock there. And they're coming in many cases from a very rural, not as forward-thinking areas of the South. And that may feed part of it, that they're less educated because AIDS now is sort of is looked at, and in many cases is, thanks be to God, a controllable infection. So there's also, I think, that plays a part of it, is that because of the medications, which have made great strides, incredible strides, I'm alive because of it, there's become a sort of laissez-faire attitude. If I get it, I can just start the pills. And now there's even PrEP, which is a prophylactic, where they give you the AIDS medication before you're even infected.
Right.
You're sexually active. So I think all of that's feeding into it.
My guest, you're hearing the voice of Doug Loth. He was one of the dozens of people photographed for this project by Atlanta photographer Billy Howard, who we've been speaking to. He built up a collection of photographs he took 30 years ago of people living with HIV. Each of these photographs comes with a message that the person themselves wrote. That collection is on display now at Emory. Since we're talking about infection rates, though, I want to turn the conversation to some recent research from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Atlanta is the fifth highest metro area for new diagnoses, and I want to bring in now Nicole Roebuck. She's the executive director of AIDS Atlanta, which is Georgia's largest HIV/AIDS service organization. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, good morning.
Let's address this issue of new infections and your opinion on why Atlanta is so high, why we have not been able to bring down the rate of new infections to the level where we would like them to be, which I assume is near zero.
I think there are many several factors that you may see in different publications. I think stigma is still an issue. You heard Billy talk about the huge stigma, and particularly in the African-American community, Billy actually, I liked how he said it, it's like a double stigma on top of the racism, poverty issues that...
And the Hispanic community as well.
And Hispanic community as well. I think even with the Hispanic community, they sometimes become invisible because of some of the laws in terms of immigration, so they've kind of disappeared. So do we really have a real handle on the Hispanic community and the disease in the community? I actually think it's much higher than is reported because of some of those issues with people in the Hispanic community fearing that if they go into a public place, a public clinic, they might be reported and somehow deported out of the country.
You think it may be higher. Now, at this point, the rate of infection is a 1 in 51 chance for all of Georgia. However, black men who have sex with other men had a 1 in 2 risk of being infected. Hispanic men had a 1 in 4 risk. That's compared with a Caucasian man of 1 in 11. You think that that rate of 1 in 4 for Hispanics may be higher than that?
I do. I do because you have to be present to be tested, you know, to be identified. You have to be present and come into a clinic to even be go into care.
To become part of statistics.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if I'm afraid, though, that I might be reported to somebody, I might not come in because of some of the immigration laws.
But that causes a problem, and it can increase rates of infection.
Absolutely.
Because they're not being treated. They're not being tested.
That's exactly right. According to some recent statistics from Georgia's epidemiology division, there are about 20,000 people in Georgia who have been identified to be HIV. So they've been tested and they know they're HIV positive, but are not in care. They're not receiving care. Hmm. And so if they're not receiving care and they're not receiving those life-saving medications that help to lower a viral load and lower the incidence, the additional risk of transmission, then those people are also transmitting the disease.
Is Truvada a solution for people? Truvada is a pill of the only drug that has been proven to prevent HIV infection. I am told that some people see Truvada as the answer. If I'm taking Truvada, I don't have to take any other precautions. Is that correct?
I think it's one tool. We look at prevention in terms of a toolkit. So I think it's one of the tools in the toolkits that works for some people. The other issue, too, with Truvada, you asked about why in the South. There are a lot of poverty issues in the South. There is a lot of access issues in the South, access to health care, health insurance. And so people who may choose to use PrEP, you usually have to have some kind of insurance or the ability to pay for that PrEP and pay for those PrEP medications. For people who are the most at risk, honestly, in terms of disparate health outcomes, they are the people who don't have access to that PrEP because PrEP, you know, isn't free.
PrEP is short for pre-exposure prophylaxis.
Exactly.
Which is supposed to prevent the infection.
Yes.
But this is all then... Let me go back right before in the last 2 minutes that we have. Let me go back to you, Billy, because 30 years on from this project that you started because you wanted to fight the stigma. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
You're hearing from someone who says people are still being affected because the stigma is still there. What I mean, do you feel as though we've made progress at a good rate?
Well, obviously we've made progress, and Doug is an example of that. I mean, when Doug was when I photographed Doug in 1987, he needed to remain anonymous because health insurance companies and employers would fire people if they found out they were HIV positive. But today, Doug has come out. He's proudly living with a disease that he has been able to manage. He's one of the few people of over 70 that I photographed that survived. He's a survivor and a hero to me. But just his life is a testament that things have changed. But, yeah, I mean, we still have a long ways to go.
Doug, did you want to add to that in the last minute that we have?
I just wanted to say that I've been extremely blessed. The first 10 years of my infection, I didn't have any medication, so my body was able to fight it. And it was the addition of those medications that has kept me alive and the support of wonderful men like Billy and folks in my life.
My guest, you're hearing the voice of Doug Loathes. He was one of the dozens of people photographed for this project by Atlanta photographer Billy Howard, who we've been speaking to. He built up a collection of photographs he took 30 years ago of people living with HIV. Each of these photographs comes with a message that the person themselves wrote. Billy's work documenting people is at Emory University. You have to make an appointment to see them. More information on how to do that at gpbnews.org. Also, we spoke with AIDS Atlanta Executive Director Nicole Roebuck. We've also published a lovely gallery of the photos at our website, gpbnews.org.